Bruchem Abayim to the 10th Shir in the series of Shir Manigamomitas, that is the 10th lecture on the 13 hermeneutical principles of each exegesis, which were used by the sage of the Talmud in order to explain, interpret, and explicate scripture. We were speaking last week about the change in paradigm between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel, which, as we see sometimes in Chazal, emerges as a dispute between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel. I mean, we give an example of a klal or prata klal, as opposed to a riboy or miyutu riboy. In other words, the change in paradigm many times is expressed in Chazal as being a dispute. In the case of klal or prata klal, riboy, miyutu riboy, is being a dispute in how to approach the interpretation of scripture. I wanted to give another example. It's always good to give another example of a machlokas of Akiva v'Shmuel, which, in my opinion, expresses also the change in paradigm, going from the concept of a logical rule to an understanding of the very, very orality of the scripture itself. There's a famous machlokas, a drasha, between Rabbi Akiva v'Shmuel, which is, how many batim do I make in the tefillin? I guess the tefillin shel Rosh. Okay? In fact, actually, how many parashas, how many batim. The reason we get an inkling that the machlokes here is involved, because there's a dispute between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yishmael, but the fact is, no nafkamina, they both take the same position. The machlokes is how to dash in the psukim. So, a machlokes like this certainly says darsheni. So,
because
the halacha is
halacha
mishpisina. Right, no. Because either, well, actually, the Gemara in Sanhedrin does say halacha mishpisina. Right, right, halacha mishpisina, right? And the Gemara says, the Mishnah says explicitly in Sanhedrin, I think, because of the basement, it's halacha mishpisina, right? But in any case, there's a machloikas and a darshan from the psukim. Now, the Gemara, which I have in front of me, is in Menachos Daf Lamed Dalem and Beis. It says three times the Torah l'taytafos, right? For you l'taytafos, but in Echad three times it says l'taytafos, and the Brayis is like this. Tana Rabbana, the rabbis learn. I mean, lamedalad reish amud beis in Menachos. It says three times the Torah l'taytafos, l'taytafos, l'taytafos. Now, the two times it says l'taytafos, there's no vav whatsoever. It's spelled lamed. Tes, tes, fe, saf. The third time, it says, tight of voice, it's spelled lamet tes, vav, tes, fe, saf. In other words, it's a vav between the two tes. Teses. Okay? So, Tana Rabbanan, the tight of voice, or the tatef, the tetfes, whatever it is, the tight of voice, the tight of voice, hare kan arba, the rabbi shmoya, so we can. In other words, the first l'taytafos is singular, there's no vav, that's one. The second l'taytafos is one too, it's in the singular. And l'taytafos with the vav has a vav there, that indicates that it's plural. So you have 1 plus 1 plus 2 equals 4. And that's the Rabbi Yishmael. And Rabbi Akiva says, Eino tzorich, you don't have to make a drasha like that. Interesting, Eino tzorich, why do you make a drasha like that? I have another drasha. Rabbi Akiva says, Tes, I guess, toit. Bekatfi. Katfi is an African language, or is a type of language, is two. And pas, or fois, ba'afriki, an African, is two. So, toit the fois, right? Tes, pesaf. So, you take the four-letter word, tes, pesaf, you divide it into two words. Each word is part of some type of a language, exotic language. One is African, and one is Katfi, I'm not exactly sure what you call it, but in any case, some type of certainly an Oriental language, African language. So, tes, tight is two, and peisaf is two. So, it says like an interesting drasha, four. What's the machlokes? What's Rabbi Akiva saying? What's Rabbi Shmuel saying? I mean, you know it's also what you've been seeing anyway for the Gemara that you mentioned. It's very interesting, just as an aside, I never really understood Rabbi Akiva's drasha. What is tes, two? And why is Pesach too? But I saw in a sefer of Rabbi Gedalia Nadal,
So he has an interesting little, called a shtickle tere, he has a little piece on this. So he says, the concept of two can be expressed in two ways. It's either a repetition of something, right? Or it could be that you make a change in something. So for example, he says, vishinantem. So the word vishinantem can be understood as meaning two things. Vishanot means to repeat over again, to repeat twice, or shino, it could be a change. In other words, there's two ways of expressing the number two. Two-ness can be expressed as a repetition, or can be expressed as a break in something. Something doesn't continue, you know, continue ad infinitum. So, he says like this. Taitafai, so test is repetition. One test comes after another test. Pay test, fice, he says, it sounds like a break, like pach, poop, pops. In other words, it sounds like a break, you break something. So he says, tak, pois. In other words, in katfi, in this language of katfi, whatever Rabbi Akiva says, so the notion of tunis was said by repetition, so that's tight. And in Afriki, African, the notion of a repetition of two was said as a break. Pois, fois, that's what he wants to say. Okay, in any case, now, what's the machlokes? Now, what's interesting is that when you learn the Gemara, you figure that the Vav indicates plurality, but really that's not true. Because if Toitafais is going to be plural, the Vav should be between the Pei and the Saf, not between the Tes and the Tes. And in fact, Toisvus says that question. The Ben Otam makes a Svara, makes a Drosha, the Toisvus reject it. It's not clear what the Drosha of Rabbi Ishmael is. Because Tosfos wants to say that maybe take the Vav and put it somewhere else, but in any case, the Tosfos reject that. I refer to Tosfos, Dibur Maskil, Tosfos, not to Tosfos. That, referring to that Tosfos, it's not clear at the end what Tosfos Maskana is. In any case, I would like to explain the Machlokes very simply. First of all, Tosfos is obviously an African term, means jewelry. I mean, the second Tosfos says this. The Kiva says it, the Tosfos says it, the Rashba says it, and the Kedusha Goddess and Chosh Baruch Hu wears tefillin, the Avobin Lochis. Tetefa is an African term. So, for example, so it is true that if I read Tetefa as a Hebrew term, so if I want to make it plural, the Vav should be between the Pei and the Saf. Rabbi Shmuel's point is, we're going by the abstract principle. Is that what the meaning of the word is? It's the abstract principle. The abstract principle is, if I have a word, repeat it twice, and then it appears a third time with a vav, even though the vav doesn't make the meaning of the word to be plural, nonetheless, I have the outline of an abstract principle of two words without a vav, another word with a vav, 1 + 1 + 2 = 4. In other words, Rabbi Shmuel is extracting the abstract principle independent of the meaning of the word. In other words, the vav of Taitafais, which appears between the two tets, and not between the pay and the saf, doesn't make the meaning plural, but on an abstract level, the inclusion of the vav in one of the words, right, abstractly indicates singular, singular, and plural. So in other words, how is Rabbi Shmuel dashing? Rabbi Shmuel is dashing the abstract principle. I have a word that appears three times in the Chumash. Two times it appears without a vav. One time it appears with a vav. So if I would consider that to be sort of like an abstract principle of any words which are in Lashon HaKodesh, right, the skeleton, abstract principle is singular, singular, and plural. So Rabbi Shmuel is dashing the abstract principle of singular, singular, and plural. Says Rabbi Akiva, why should you dashing the abstract principle? Dashing the word itself in its native Gilgal in African or Katfi. In other words, test means two in Katfi and Pesach means two in African. In other words, Rabbi Akiva is darshaning the actual meaning of the word, what the word means, right? Even in the African. So in other words, what's the machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel? So
Rabbi Shmuel says, look, I can't daushen the word. It's African, or whatever it is. It certainly is not following the rules of single and plural in terms of Lashon HaKodesh. But I'll daushen the abstract principle of minus vav, plus vav. And the Rabbi Akiva says, no reason to do so. Look at the word itself. Take the word itself. See what it means in African and Kasvi. And it means two. The first part of the word means two in Kasvi. The second part of the word means two in African. And you get four. So Rabbi Akiva is just looking at the actual meaning of the word in those two languages. So what's the machlokes between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel? Rabbi Shmuel is dashing the abstract skeleton principle, the most abstract notion of singular versus plural. And Rabbi Akiva is going to the actual meaning of the words itself. Actually, more than the actual word being the words. According to Rabbi Gedalia, he's saying, look, Tess is written what it means. It means to, and it's written Tess Tess. Pas, or Fais, is written what it sounds what it means. In other words, Tess Tess is written what it means, and Pais sounds like it means what it means. In other words, test test is written test test. That's a concept of two, the repetition. Pois, pois, sounds like it means. That's a break, it's also two. So in other words, Rabbi Akiva is dashing the actual, to explain the expression, the kishkes of the word. He's not even dashing the meaning of the word. He's dashing, putting up Gedalia, he's dashing either the repetition of the letters of the word or dashing the sound of the word. And both the repetition, the sound, are communicating the notion, the most basic, elementary, empirical notion of two-ness. So that's this machlokes of Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Shmuel, in my opinion, is an expression of the general difference in paradigm, right? That we spoke about the last year.
If the vav was between the pay and the tough, would we assume that there'd be no machlokes in Rabbi Akiva and Shmuel? Because everyone would agree that there's no abstract meaning to...
Could possibly be. Yeah, the Harami.
And why... how would you understand kind of the connection or the between an African word and a Hebrew word?
Oh, well, that's a whole... That's whatever. I mean, it's not the only time in the Chodesh you get a word from a different language. For example, the Gemara in Bracha speaks about Yagas Adusa, explicitly Aramaic. But I remember that I once heard from the Yankov Kamenetsky at Mesheva Brachas. Actually, I think it appears in Emes LeYankov, but he wants to claim that it says Hatzfaldeya. Tzfaldeya is an Egyptian word. That's where the Tzaddik's not a dogish, because in Egyptian, they weren't Madgish the Tzaddik. But when it says Vatal Hatzfaldeya, so he explains, because Rashi learns to call it the Shehut. It doesn't refer to the actual frog, the animal. It refers to the pestilence. So that becomes the Hebrew word. But I heard that at him one time in Shalosh Shuddas in Tiberi at my Sheva Brachas. But anyway, okay. Hashkafas HaGodakhtam is not for Joshua's. In any case, but as an aside, that's an important thing. Okay, so the only reason I want to bring this example is show how, in fact, this Machlokes Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shmuel expresses itself in different places in Shas. And there are other places too, but this is, I think, a very interesting example. It's an example that everybody knows, the Torah phrase, et cetera, if you learn Menachos. Yeah?
Would Rabbi Schwartz recommend Gedalia Nadal's whole piece here on the Midas and the...
He has some beautiful pieces there, yeah. They're sharp and they're very nice. He doesn't go on all the meters. He speaks about
what we've seen on...
The first part of the Sefer, unfortunately, the second part of the Sefer, there's a warning there. But the first part of the Sefer is some beautiful type. By the way, they published, since he was Nefter, his Kedusha Manshas, his Kedusha Mankalim, his Kedusha... It's three volumes. I mean, I don't know if this... whatever.
This book's on the internet.
Whatever, in any case. I'm not officially recommending it, but... I saw it in the Sefer, it's a beautiful piece of paper. Okay, fine. Now, I want to speak a little bit. We spoke about the drashas right now. And that's what we devoted the last 9 shiurim, right, and to the drashas of Chazal. We spoke about simply the Yud Gimel Midas, and we spoke about how they in other words, the process, the historical process they took, you know, we spoke about before Hillel, Rabbi Shmuel, then Rabbi Akiva. The fact is, though, that we know that there was a change in the history of the oral law, of the Torah Shebe'al Peh, because at one point in history, specifically, I mean, for sure, at the time of Rebbe, where in fact the Ikar Limud of the Torah Shebe'al Peh focused not so much on the drushes as we have it today in the Sefer, the Sefer, but really on the Mishnayos. In other words, we know that the Gemara, even though the Gemara itself, many times in the Mishnah says Vinahan Emili, and the Gemara will be Gadrasha, but the fact is that the most of the Torah Shebe'al Peh, the bulk of the halacha, originates in the Gemara, which, I mean, clearly comes more to explain Mishnayos than it is in fact actually coming to, making drushes. Now, and the fact is that this is something that perhaps we've spoken about in other shiurim, but it's pretty clear that after the time of the Tanayim, that even though the Amoraim will actually evoke drushes to explain braises and mishnayos, nonetheless, it's pretty clear that that after the time of the Tanayim, there are no original drushes that are coming to explicate new halakhas which are not already found in the Tanaic corpus. I think we've spoken about this. There's certainly I have an article about this in Rishimu, I think, Volume 2. But the question is, how did this happen? And what's interesting is that, and I speak about two in that article, I refer you to the article for details, but from the, it's clear from the Gemara Lama Gimel Beis and Bava Metzia, that in fact, actually, the Gemara became a little bit of, in other words, the text of drushes, a little bit became the Mishnah and not the Psukim. The Gemara is a little bit the type of a drusha on the Mishnayos. The fact is that in several places, in Brachas, Rashi, Heymar Aleph, Yud Aleph, Heymar Aleph, Yud Aleph, Mud Beis, Muzayim, Mud Beis, Rashi defines Gemara as the Yishuv of Mishnayos, Kisurim Michsura, which is a type of a drusha on the Mishnah. When did this change take place? How did it take place? At what point did somehow the weight of the Torah Shebe'al Peh shift from exegesis of verse to, I would call, exegesis of Mishnah? We know that this certainly came about. And even though we have a Sifra, the Sifri, like the Rambam says explicitly, this Hakdamah to the Mishnah Torah, Rav, who is the final redactor of the Sifra, that the Rambam says, wrote the Sifror, redacted the Sifror in order to explain the origins of the Mishnah. But the fact is that the Torah HaMasua Lanu, which accounts for the majority of the halacha, you know, begins with the Mishnah and then the Gemara. So the question is, at what point did this take place? At what point did the Mishnayos become the text of drushes of exegesis, which not only competed, but I think actually resulted in the major body and corpus of the Torah Shebe'al Peh. At what point did this take place? Now, I don't have I'm telling you right now, I don't have a clear, obvious answer, but I have a hypothesis. And I'm going to reveal my hypothesis for the first time in history here on Hashkafacircle.com. When do I think this took place? Now, first of all, you're all aware of the fact that there's a machlokes, a dispute, certainly among achrayim. What is the earliest form? Is the Mishnaic form the earliest form, or is the drasha the earliest form? And I think that just about every person in the last 150 years who's thought about these things has something to say about it. For example, the most famous two people who battle it out are the Yitzhak Isaac Kalevi, the Deres Rishayim, and I would say probably the Malbim, even the Malbim is actually, you know, addressing him, he presents his issue. The Malbim and Yonas HaShachar, right, you know, present 613 rules of exegesis, in which, basically, the Malbim created an entire rigorous system in which you could see how the halachas, all the halachas of the Sifra, the Sifri, you know, actually emerge from the Pasuk. And the Deiris HaRishonim dismisses the Malbim completely. And even, he even makes a statement that there's not a single halacha that's learned from a pasuk. All the drushas are all asmachtas, and that really everything originates from the Mishnah Rishonah, which comes from an earlier era, etc., etc. I don't know, go into the Deiris HaRishonim as part of his general agenda of establishing the Mesorah, the antiquity of the Mesorah, as opposed to the to hermeneutical logic, which might have been exercised and generated in later generations. But in any case, this is a famous machlokes between the Deiris HaRishonim and the Malbim, and much has been said about this. I mean, it's every few years that someone comes out with a new article, a new proof, what came first, when we come later, etc., etc. So I would like to put my two cents in. Okay? Now, it's interesting, there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin, which I'm pretty sure we must have quoted it previously. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says in Hevav Med Aleph that the Gemara says, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Stam Masnisim Rabbi Meir, Stam Mishnah goes like Rabbi Meir, Stam Tosefer Rabbi Nechemya, Stam Sifra Rabbi Yehuda, Stam Sifri Rabbi Shimon, V'kulu Aliba de Rabbi Akiv. So, Rabbi Yochanan's statement lists, first he lists Mishnah, then he lists Tosefta, then he lists Sifra, then Sifri, and Kulu Aliba de Rabbi Akiva. It doesn't mean Kulu de Rabbi Akiva, right? I mean, Rashi says Aliba de Rabbi Akiva means Mashalamdu mi Rabbi Akiva Omro. But I mean, what does it mean we Rabbi Akiva Omro? I mean, they were Talmid of Rabbi Akiva, but the fact is that they're Talmid more Agi Rabbi Akiva than Mishnah. And what does Mishnah have to do with Sifra and Sifri? I mean, the entire corpus. So that's one Gemara. There's another Gemara in the beginning of Megillah. Actually, it exists in several places, but one place is the beginning of Megillah. There's the first Mishnah Megillah, which everybody knows, in the Beis Ben Aleph. The Mishnah says in Megillah, Megillah Nikos, Ben Aleph, Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, Yud Dal, Betes Vav, Lepochus, Vela Yosef. And then, the Gemara says, Omer B'chana, Omer Rabbi Yechon, the same Rabbi Yechon, says, Zu divrei Rabbi Akiva stimasor. The dorish zman zmanam zmaneim. Chacham oimrim in koyno yisei elo bezman, etc., etc. In other words, once again, the same Rabbi Yechon that appears in Sanhedrin. Right? I mean, it appears other places too, obviously, but, right? Zu divrei Rabbi Akiva stimasor. The dorish zman zmanam zmaneim. And Rashi actually, in Rabbi Kibas de Basar, Rashi actually brings, offers two Peirushim. One Peirushi offers, he actually refers to the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Peivavah Bet Aleph. And then he has a kasha on it because we see that the Lashon appears not only by Rabbi Kiva, but then he goes on to another Lashon that means that that's a star mission that goes later to Rabbi Kiva. But what does he say? What does Rabbi Yechon say? Zu de Rabbi Kivas de Masor, the Dorash, Zman, Zmanam, Zmaneim. I mean, the Gemara begins by saying, how many of the Megillahs written in all these days? The Gemara says, Dorash, Zman, Zmanam, Zmaneim. So I want to propose the following thing. I want to propose that what's special about what's called the Mishnas Rabbi Akiva? The Mishnas Rabbi Akiva. So I want to propose what's special about the Mishnas Rabbi Akiva is that before Rabbi Akiva, this is once again a hypothesis, before Rabbi Akiva, the Mishnayis were taught Stam, they weren't the product necessarily of a drasha. They were taught Stam, the Stam Mishnayis, like the Deiris HaRishonim. They were halakas. I mean, we know that Hillel came to Yerushalayim, and it was a halacha that we spoke about, everybody knew, and he brought a drasha on it. But in other words, it could possibly be that the Stam Mishnayos were passed down from tradition, like the Deiris HaRishonim would say. Could it be that Rabbi Akiva changed things? Could it be that what marks the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva is that the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva is said is the conclusion of a drasha from a pasuk. In other words, there are certain Mishnayos, and I'm calling this the pre Rabbi Akiva Mishnayos, which are Mishnayos traditions, which come from Tamim Memorial, from Masechta, and Chazal will give, let's say, drashas to explain them, but the halacha is not necessarily learned from the pasuk. The halacha is a tradition that somehow when the pasuk is brought because Chazal, learned that halacha with respect to that pasuk. Right? But on the other hand, Rabbi Akiva's Mishnayos were different. Rabbi Akiva's Mishnayos, after the pilpul of Rabbi Akiva in the drashas of the psukim, then he would summarize it or reach the conclusion, which would be what? Which would be the drasha, which would be the Mishnah. In other words, the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva sits on top of a precipice of pilpul, of drashas, of hermeneutics, of logic, of dialectics. Now, so in other words, and that's what the Gemara in Sanhedrin is saying. What the Gemara in Sanhedrin is saying, when it says Sifra, Sifri, and Mishnah is Alibah de Rabbi Akiva, the Gemara is saying is that the Torah of Rabbi Akiva was a Torah which generated Mishnayos as the conclusions of a pilpul of drashas, which we spoke about. In other words, we spoke about that the Torah of Rabbi Akiva, in other words, not only, in other words, what happened is that the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva originates in the drasha from the pasuk, so the Mishnah becomes a type of a Torah Shebichsav. It's not a separate body, separate from the Torah Shebichsav. It emerges from the Torah Shebichsav. In other words, before Rabbi Akiva, we spoke about, turns out to a two separate things. That we saw in the Sifra, at the end of the Chukaisan, the two separate things, the Torah Sav Teiris, Rabbi Shmuel, Torah Sav Teshviopeh. Not only did Rabbi Akiva, through his drashas, combine the Torah Teshviopeh, but from the drashas, Rabbi Akiva emerged a Torah Teshviopeh Mishnah, which comes from the Torah Teshviopeh, called the Mishnah. In other words, the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva is the Minahane Mile that the Gemara speaks about it. In other words, the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva, the base of Rabbi Akiva's Mishnayos are the process of drashas, of pilpul, of the Torah Shebi'alpeh, the pilpul, which we see the Sifro and the Sifri. That's Rabbi Akiva. In other words, what marks the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva is that it sits on top of a process of pilpul and drashos, and therefore it's the precipice of this entire mountain of Torah Shebi'alpeh. And that's what the Gemara means, Rabbi Yechon means when he says, Zu divrei Rabbi Akiva stimosa de dorish zman zmanam zmaneyim. In other words, what's unique about Rabbi Akiva stimosa? It's the product of the drashas of Rabbi Akiva, Zman, Zmanam, Zmanayim, as opposed to being a Mishnah which was originated in a tradition. Yeah.
And why does it give the names of the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva? I'm not sure why each one is connected to a...
Because each Talmud, what happens is, when it says Kula Malabit Rabbi Akiva, it was each Talmud, one Talmud specialized in Sifri, which is B'midbar Devarim. One Talmud specialized in the Sifra, Vayikra. One Talmud specialized in what?
In Mishnah.
But Kulam Alibi Rabbi Akiva is like M theory and string theory. In other words, according to Rabbi Akiva, it's all one big thing. Everything's connected. That's in Rabbi Akiva. In other words, the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva is the product of a grand unified field theory, which originates in the thing, which means what is it? What is the consequence of this? Is that the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva is like a Torah Shebichsav. So therefore, this begins the process which Rebbe, two generations later, will dash in the Mishnayos. In other words, to darshan a Mishnah is like darshaning a Pasuk, because the Mishnah emerges from Rabbi Akiva in the Torah Shebichsav. Now, based upon this, yeah.
This is not like Rashi.
No. This is, I'm learning the Gemara differently. Now, you can read it to Rashi, but I'm learning the Gemara differently. Now, what I want to say is that it's very, very interesting that what do we have over here? In other words, we have the procession, right? We have Rabbi Akiva, we have Rabbi Meir, who was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva, and then we have Rebbe. Now, there's a very interesting Gemara in Erev, in Yud-Gimel Amud Beis, and there the Gemara speaks about Rabbi Meir, and they couldn't be Eimed Al Daito, they couldn't understand him, right? And then Rebbe says, why am I so smart? I'm so smart because I saw the back of Rabbi Meir. Right? I saw the front of my man had been smarter. So now the question I used to ask in on Beis Yosef, so why do you see the front of him? So go to the other side of the class and see the shield and see the front. So to use the derech that I've been posing over the last year, my God is in Chazal, let's come and tell us stories. They come to tell us about Chazal themselves. What does it mean to say that Rebbe says, why am I so smart? I saw the back of Rabbi Meir. The answer is, the back of Rabbi Meir is the very essence of the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva. The Mishnah is the precipice. The Mishnah is almost like an n-dimensional manifold. You have an n-minus-1boundary. The Mishnah, if I look and examine the Mishnah, I'll be able to uncover all the pilpul, all the logic, all the drushes, all of the genius, all of the drushes of Kisli Oisis of Rabbi Akiva. In other words, the Mishnah is somehow this boundary, this interface between the generations after Rabbi Meir, will be dashing the Mishnahs, and between the logic and the genius and the hermeneutics and the pilpul and dialectics of Rabbi Akiva. So that's why Rabbi is not interested in Rabbi Meir's face. He's interested in Rabbi Meir's back, because that's what he has recourse with. In other words, the Mishnah of Rabbi Meir somehow captures the logic of Rabbi Akiva, which gives the Mishnah a tremendous amount of hermeneutical and rational depth, and it's up to the later generations to dash this out for the Mishnah itself. That's what Rebbe means, but Rabbi Meir, you can't be Eimed Al Daito. Because from the other side, who knows what came into it? That's the pshat of the Gemara in Daf Yud-Gimel Amud Beis. So in other words, what I want to say is that we have, if we can describe the Torah Shebi'al Peh, it goes up and then comes down again. In other words, we come from we go up from the original and from Hillel, Rabbi Shmuel, and then we go down again to Rabbi Akiva and go up and down. In other words, what happens is that we emerge from the Torah Shebichsav and we create a Mishnah from that, and then by dashing the Mishnah, we bring it back again into the Torah Shebichsav. And that's why Rabbi Akiva's Mishnah made it possible, which later will become the Gemara of Rebbe, where the Mishnayis now served as the hermeneutical text of exegesis in place of the Torah Shebichsav. That's what I want to say is this important Yisrael. Now, of course, in other words, if you ask me, who do you paskin like, the Deras Rishayim or the Malbim, I would say I paskin like the Deras Rishayim up to before Rabbi Akiva. After Rabbi Akiva, the Lacha is like the Malbim. So, in any case, the important thing, which I want to bring out, it's important, is that the truth of the Torah, I've always spoken about this, is not what's called historical truth, but it's called textual truth. In other words, I haven't brought in any of the Dead Sea Scrolls, I haven't brought in the Temple Scroll, which the experts bring, Perhaps I don't believe that you should use archaeology to understand the Torah. You know, it's good for, I don't know. But in any case, what do we need archaeology? The text itself is telling us what's going on. In other words, the truth of the Torah is the truth that the text understood itself. And And when we look at these agadatas, we shouldn't think of them as being only, you know, nice, you know, stories with, you know, Musa and his pilos. But actually, the agadatas of Chazal are actually the way in which Chazal are expressing and exposing us to the actual methodology and process and techniques which Chazal used throughout the different generations. Okay? So in other words, I want to call, this is my hypothesis. My hypothesis is that the role of Mishnah changes pre-Rabbi Akiva and post-Rabbi Akiva. And it was Rabbi Akiva, so in other words, not only did Rabbi Akiva, in fact, combine the Torah Shabbat Torah Shabbat Peh, but Rabbi Akiva actually created from the Torah Shabbat Chassav, for the a new Torah Shabbat Chassav called the Mishnah. This enables the Gemara, and later, two generations afterwards, so Rabbi begins the Shusa Gemara, Gemara Zalam Gemara based on Bamatziah, to actually use the Mishnah as the exegetical text upon which to generate the further, you know, halachas which would be needed for, you know, the rest of the history of Klal Yisrael.
So prior to Rabbi Akiva, there was this kind of accepted Mishnah.
Right. And it would bring around to a possible, right. It
wasn't necessarily connected or correlated to any drushes or psukim.
Not necessarily, right. Or it could have been learned together with the possible. There wasn't a logical connection.
And after Rabbi Akiva, it's his Mishnahs, his teachings, become the Torah Shabbat Sabbath and the text.
Right.
So it was only the generation of Rabbi Akiva when drushes were being used to understand or to
I think so, because we see clearly that the Stam Sifroa, the Pilpul Sifroa, that's only Rabbi Akiva, Sifroa Rabbi Akiva.
So only that kind of fleeting moment in history.
That's what I think. Now, the fact is that, like I said before, this hypothesis. Can I prove it, this and that? Well, Maisa, what you'd have to do is go through the entire Torah, throw Shas, all the Sifroa Sifroi, and see the way Beisilo Beishamai Dashim Sokim, and the way, you know, after Rabbi Akiva Dashim Sokim. You know, many of the drushes of Beishamai Silo are much more like, in other words, they're like, the more, like, for example, the machlek is a basil v'shamah, the first pack of brachas, for example, whether you say kriyash not necessarily lying down, it's not really like a logical drasha. In other words, they make the halacha, shenema, like it says. But you don't see any, you know, it's like they have the halacha, as it says, b'shopov kumecha. In other words, first they say the halacha, as it says, b'shopov kumecha. It's not that, in other words, you don't see any technique and logic by which you're going from the pasuk to the drash. I mean, there's a halacha like this, and that was the way in which they read the pasuk. That was the accepted way, the halacha b'kupos of the Rambam. That's the way they read the pasuk. That was the meaning of the pasuk. But, in other words, if you go to a drash of Rabbi Akiva, in the Sifra, they're much more complicated, much more, you know, and Rabbi Akiva, it comes to the halacha at the very end of the drasha. First he says hypothesis, then he says kalech l'derach zeh, kalech l'derach zeh. In other words, according to Rabbi Akiva, first you begin with the drasha, and then you end with the halacha. In Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, first you begin with the halacha, and then you end with the drasha. Now, of course, this is a klal. I'm sure that, you know, my dear listeners will, you know, email me all the Mitzvah Stigos to this and everything, so I'm saying it's only a hypothesis, but my claim is that the, you know, in Chazal, the medium is the message, meaning that, in fact, the way they say it is l'chayla the way, the order in which, you know, in which the progression, the logical development took place. In other words, in Beisilu Beishamai, first they say the halacha, Shunamar, it's like this. In Rabbi Akiva, it's different. First is the entire pilpul, the third derivation, there's different, you know, possibilities, and then at the end, there's a maskana. So, in other words, this alludes to the difference in the meaning of the Mishnayos. In any case, all the raya's that the Malbim brings, or the Dosh Hashanah brings, and some Hafa means, in other words, they're all true. It depends upon which generation and which Tekufa. But I want to say that's really, in a certain sense, the most important consequence of Rabbi Akiva. Which means is that really, in a certain sense, we're going to go back really to the Ravid. The Ravid, remember in the beginning of the Sefer. Well, we raised the question, what, you know, what's the purpose of learning the Yud Gimel Midos, the Bais of Rabbi Yishmael? And the answer is, says the Ravid, because the Bais of Yishmael gives us an understanding until the origins, it gives us a munna in the Torah, what is the Torah Shebi'al Peh? Where does it come from? What is it based upon? In other words, and this is very, very important. We have to say the Torah Shebi'al Peh is not something that someone made up, but really is the process of a process, you know, which originates, you know, in the Vumash Rabbeinu, Torah Shebi'al Peh, etc., etc. And what we've done is that we've gone one step further and not even spoken about, you know, the drushes, but actually the Mishnayos. The Mishnayos are very, very, in my opinion, very inextricably linked with the drushes. The Mishnayos, not several drushes. And actually that's what the Rambam says. The Sifra, says Rambam, the Sifra of Rav, was redacted in order to explain the basis of the Mishnayos. But the Sifra, of course, is the Libra of Rabbi Akiva. Right now, this is not to say that Mishnayos are basically by Shammai too. What I'm saying is that where I need a basis of a Mishnah is an expression, right, of the unique nature of the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva. This is something which is, of course, it's a hypothesis to think about this, but I think that, you know, from the rayas, the passages we've seen in the Gemara, seem very much to point to this thing.
This is
Rambam in
the
Haktamah
of the Mishnah?
Right. The Rambam in the Haktamah of the Mishnah Torah. No. Haktamah of the Mishnah Torah. The Rambam says it's literally like that. Okay, so, in any case, that's my hypothesis, but to test out this hypothesis, I'm not going to have the opportunity now, nor am I going to have the opportunity next week either. Because actually, at this point, I think that this is going to have to really end the series of Shubha Yigul Midas. There's much more to speak about, not only this hypothesis, but the fact is that I think that the series of Shu'ulim there are probably an introduction to Yigul Midas. I mean, there are a lot of technical details to be worked out, but I'm not sure that it's Shavu L'chol Nefesh. In any case, with an understanding of the structure of the Midas, both the structure of the Midas and where the Midas are placed in the historical context, I think that, I hope that, you know, this has contributed to our understanding of the Midas as we work out the details in every drasha that we come and encounter, either in the Shas or in the Midrasha Halacha. But in any case, Ten Shiurim is, you know, every world is ten spheres. Ten Shum is a Dov Shalem. Of course, I probably left out most of the things that I should have spoken about. But I think that Zil Gemar, which we say, that people could, you know, or in mathematics, you know, the proof is left to the reader. But in any case, I think that I've tried to, you know, present a overall understanding of the Yigul Midas, not only what they are, but their role in the Teresh Be'al Peh, and the Halacha Musul B'Yadeinu from Moshe Rabbeinu, right, until the Tanoim, Rebbe, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yishmael, Hillel, and I think that we've, you know, hopefully, we've been able to express, you know, Hagdamas and introductions, and you say this, that, you know, will be helpful when we, you know, when we sit around and we think about, you know, the Droshes and Chazal made. But in any case, you know, at this point now, at least in the meanwhile, in the Vaila, the work is over, right, before we take it up another time. So, in any case, I think that we'll...
Can we much of us give an introduction to next week's series?
Okay, your next week's series, I've been coming attractions, but due to quote-unquote popular demand, I think we're going to begin a new series of Shu'urim, which is really going to focus on what's called the development of the Halacha, from its sources in the Shas and the Gemara, through the Rishonim, through the Gaonim, through the Rishonim, and to the Shulchan Aruch, and the Nisei Kelim, and the Paiskim. In other words, it's going to be a shiur in how the Halacha develops. And we're not going to give a series of lectures on it, but actually we're going to operate in the order of the Gemara. And the first Gemara we're going to pick is naturally Brachos. Daf Yomi begins with Brachos. And we're going to take the different sukkahs and Brachos in order, and try to not only illuminate how we get from the Gemara to the Halacha, but also the general ideas and principles, right? The ideas and principles of how the Halacha is actually extracted from the sources. In other words, it's going to be really a double shia in, number one, what are the principles of the Halachic process? And at the same time, seeing how it actually works in the specific sukkahs that we're going to do. So we'll have an interesting understanding of really how the Rishonim understood the Gemara. Now, of course, so this is going to, of course, require an understanding of the very text of the Gemara itself. What is the Gemara doing? Had the Gemara understand Halacha? Had the Rishonim understand the Gemara? Had Rishonim understand the Yerushalmi, the Bavli, the Tosefta, etc., etc.? So basically, we're going to try to be
as tech.
What?
And Minhag, how does, what role does Minhag play in
well,
the process?
We'll speak about Minhag, we'll speak about, you know, who can argue on who, what's called interpretation. Do you argue by interpreting, or do you interpret by arguing? In other words, we're going to go into all the vital issues of really how the halacha evolved from the Gemara to the Shulchan Aruch, to the Paiskim. And we're going to try to somehow illuminate the fundamentals of that process, which, of course, will be relevant in any sugya that a person learns if he, you know, Chas v'Shalom learns to leave the hill for some. So, in any case...
In a sense, of taking the redaction of the Talmud Shir...
Right, so actually, this is right. This is the next step. The redaction of the Chasimus HaShash, redaction of the Talmud, we show how the Gemara took the Mishnayos and came to the Halacha. Came to the conclusion of the Gemara. And now we'll see how we come from the Gemara to the, you know, to the Rishonim and to the Shulchan Aruch. Of course, everything, you know, is always a circle, because if we discuss the Rishonim, we're going to discuss the Gemara, and so basically it's going to be like a circle. We're going to go back to the very beginning of the redaction of the Talmud Shir when we finish. But that's good, because everything is all everything. Everything is contained in everything. And that's the Inyan of Bechinas, that everything is contained in everything else. So in any case, those of you who are interested in really the understanding the halachic process on a textual level, so therefore you can stay tuned for next week. We'll get in Mir Tashem the first year on Monday, and we'll see how far we go. Mir Tashem. Until then, from the undisclosed place in Yerushalayim HaKadosh, Kol Tov.